Hello, ladies.
Okay, I want to make sure I turn this on. So it's on. We're good. We are just a few minutes early, but I have a feeling that most people are probably here by now. And we have such a limited amount of time. I thought we would go ahead and get started. And if somebody comes in a few minutes, welcome them, and that's no problem. Does everybody feel like you have enough space and you feel good in here? If you want to spread out and scooch your chair to the back, you can. Just want everybody, if you want to wear a mask, you can. You know? just whatever makes you feel comfortable. All right, I'm Jenny Haynes, and I'll just introduce myself, and then I'm going to ask you each to introduce yourself real quickly, too. Just say, hey, I'm so-and-so. Anyway, we've been here about a little over 4 years now. My husband is the pastor of worship and music. Some of you already know that, but some of you, if you're visiting, you don't know that. so my husband, we moved here from Charlotte for him, for that position there. We have four children. They're all adult children now. And I think that's why Christy asked me to talk on this. I could actually talk about every stage of marriage because I'm a marriage and family therapist. But this is the stage that I'm in. And so anyway, we have four young adult children. Our oldest is he's almost 33. And married, and we have two grandchildren there, six and a half year old and a 3 month old. And they live in, North Carolina. And then our, second, we have three daughters after that. And, our daughter Bethany lives here with her husband. That's so exciting because, to actually have somebody live here in town, you never know what's going to happen, you know, with your kids when they get married and move on. And so for now, we're just thankful that they are here in town. And they're expecting their first baby in April. So that's our third grandchild. And then we have another daughter who's living here now. It probably won't be long term. It's kind of in a transitional stage. And so she's living with us now. She's single. And then our youngest daughter is married, and they live in Arlington, Virginia, and both work in D.C. She was a nurse. Now she's a clinical care coordinator, but she graduated from Samford, so, yeah. They have a great nursing program there. So we actually had her here. She was in college when we moved here. And so we had her close by for a couple years before she got married, and that was actually a blessing because she got married right after college, and she met her now husband in fifth grade in Charlotte. So, yeah, and they went to separate colleges. He was at Virginia Tech, and she's here at Samford, and they couldn't transfer because of their majors. Didn't have them at each other's schools. So when they were ready to get married because they'd had a long distance relationship for 4 years, so they're married and live there. So I want everybody just to real quickly, we'll run through the line and say your name.
Brenda Park, Sonny Stone, Ian Carmichael, Jenny Cavallo, Cindy Bragland, Leslie Johnson.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you all for being here. It's a privilege to get up and share about this topic, but also just a little bit about my life as we went through, well, we're still going through this phase. There's no cutoff when exactly one stage starts and the other one ends sometimes. And you might be older and have children when you're older. And so the age factor doesn't count. But, before I get started, let's pray and then we'll get going. Thank you, Father, for this day, the beautiful sunshine and the weather that you've given us to make it simple for us to get here and spend time with each other. We just thank you for this opportunity this morning. I pray that you'll use something that I say to minister to each lady that's here. And for the other sessions and speakers, I pray the same for them. I pray that you will keep us safe and hopefully well with this Omicron variant, and that you will just protect each lady that's here and their families. In Jesus' name, amen. Okay. So is anybody visiting Briarwood for the first time? Okay. Is anybody visiting Briarwood? It may not be your first time. Okay. All right. So, okay, we got a couple of visitors. Thank you for coming, too. It's great to have people from other areas and other churches here, too. Okay. So my first question for you is, when does emptiness start, since that's our topic? You might have in your mind when emptiness is, but what do you think? Anybody can answer that. Okay. All right. And you're right. But it actually starts when your first child goes off to college or graduates high school. Okay, so it actually starts when, because you're going through a transition. It starts then. I remember when our kids were like eighth grade and younger, and John calls those the glory years, because everybody was home and together, and that doesn't last like that forever. Then they go into high school, and then you have to start letting go more, middle school, high school, more and more. Then they go off to college, and you have to let go even more. Then they get married or go start their career as singles or whatever, and you have to let go more and more. So life is a continual process of, on parenting is a continual process of letting go. You know, when your first child goes off to kindergarten, y'all remember that first day? Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Going off to kindergarten and then middle school. Okay, our son, he's the oldest, so I'll probably refer to him a couple times because that's when our transition started. When he went off to seventh grade, I thought, I'm not going to take on extra commitments because I want to be available. and so I did that. I kind of let that year, I still was involved in some things, but I'm like, I need to be available and all that. And honestly, he was busier then and probably didn't need me to be as available then, but I thought I was going to do that because this is a transition, So empty nest stage starts when your first one either, they don't have to go off to college necessarily, because some people go off and work and start a career or whatever and then go to college or don't. But that empty nest stage starts when your first one graduates from high school. And it kind of continues. And if you have one child, it's going to be based on, that one child and graduating from college and moving on with their life. Our kids are like 9 years apart, from oldest to youngest. And so that transitioning stage lasted a while for me. But I kind of knew what to expect each time. Each time a child went off to college or to work, it was letting go. And I think you experienced the similar kind of thing with each child. But the first one might be the hardest because you're just getting used to it all. And I remember when our son went off to college, and he was close enough. This is when we lived in St. Louis, and he was close enough. It was like 5.5 hours away. So he was close enough to come home a little bit more. It was only like 5.5 hours away. But the first time he came home was my birthday, October 12th. He'd gone off to college. We dropped him off. But honestly, there's nothing like coming home in that empty bedroom. And you walk by it and you keep walking by it. And it's a visual reminder of the stage that you're in, that transition, that empty bedroom. And these are all natural stages, you know, you want them, you don't want them to stay home forever. You know, you want them to mature and go on and go to college or work and have their, you know, find somebody they're in love with and get married. You want all that, but you also, it's a process of letting go as a parent. John and I had a really hard time that first time. And we had a hard time with each of them after that, but it was like, okay, this is familiar territory. It'll get easier. walking by that empty room, not being able to chat, not seeing, they're busy when they're in high school, so you don't see them that much anyway, but then, not being able to chat at breakfast or late at night or something like that. It's a monumental change, you know, those glory days when everybody's all together. There still can be glory days in a different way as they get older, you know, but it's just, and nothing like makes my heart happier than when all of my kids are home now, at the same time. And that's maybe once a year, honestly. But that, you know, that floats my boat. You know, it's like all your hens are in the hen house, you know, but you don't have that as much. So I'm not trying to scare you. I know I was talking with one of you earlier that, you know, your daughter's going off to college later and, another year. And I don't want to scare anybody because every transition is natural. It's just sometimes if you can prepare for it, and that helps too. And so anyway, I'll go back to my story about my son coming home the first time from college. He surprised me for my birthday, and I'm hard to get a surprise by. Honestly, I'm a detailed person, so I figure everything out. It was his idea. He had a ride. He didn't have a car at college. He had a ride. Somebody was coming back. And so he came back, and on a Friday night, we were having pizza with my girls there, and he shows up at the door. And of course, I start crying. I'm so excited. Oh, you know, you're home. And it was just like this, like, wonderful weekend where I felt like I was floating on air. You know, he went to the ball games that our girls were in or cheering at or whatever, and we had time together. And he was so appreciative. He's like, I ask him, do you want me to help you with your laundry? Oh, Mom, I can do that. I'm like, no, I'm doing it anyway. Let me just throw it in with the rest. Thank you so much, Mom. He was so appreciative of the things, you know, that we kind of take for granted, that laundry's, you know, clean laundry. And, Mom, this food is so good. You know, you've been on cafeteria food. Anyway, so then you have to tell them goodbye. You've got a couple days. And I have called this the yo-yo years. When your kids go off to college, or start their career and move away or something, they're going to come back periodically, and it's going to feel like a yo-yo. You're going to appreciate being with them, and having that time, and then they're going to leave. And then you're going to, you know, go down to like, oh, man, I just miss them. I want them here again. It's not the same. But you know that you're going to see them again, you know, eventually. And it does kind of feel like you're on this emotional roller coaster. You ride that where, you know, it's kind of the yo-yo years where your kids are kind of coming back and forth and back and forth. And you never know if they're done with college and you might have a child back at home. We do right now. We had another one back at home before she was getting married for several months. And now we have another one at home while she's going through a transition in her life. And I'll just share this, and she's very public about it, but she was dealing with alcohol addiction. And so she said, I need to come home and get my life on track. And so that's what she's been doing the last almost a year and a half. And she wouldn't mind me sharing that because she's very public about it. So anyway, she's home with her dog. You know? and we kind of did away with having animals in the house a long time ago because you know, having four kids, we had a dog at once, and I'm like, no. I have four kids to keep up. I don't want to have to keep up with the dog. And kids that were dragged along, you know. They were not quite big enough to take them for walks and stuff, and he dug up my yard. And anyway, we have learned to appreciate having a dog. She's a great dog, actually. But you know what? There's a season for everything. And honestly, the fact that she was here during and I might get choked up, so I got my tissues. For those of you that know what happened to my husband, like a year ago, he had COVID really badly. And honestly, I didn't know if I was going to wake up and be a widow or if he was going to be disabled the rest of his life. And so last December, you know, we were in the hospital three times with COVID. And the last time they finally admitted him, this was before vaccines and there weren't many infusions available and that kind of thing. But that daughter was there during that time with her dog, and the dog was a great comfort, actually. And so was my daughter, because, you know, and he not feeling well and kind of out of it, I had her there to interact with, you know. And so one thing I wanted to say is we see in Ecclesiastes 3:1-8, for everything there is a season, a time for activity under heaven, a time to be born and a time to die, and it goes on. But this is a season of life that you're facing, or you are in the midst of already. And I think what makes it more complicated, because it's almost like, well, I was in the 60s group this morning. I don't know if some of you are in the 50s group or the 40s group or whatever, but I just turned 60 this year. But when we're in this kind of, there's not an age demarcation on some of these stages. It's just, you know, wherever you've been, where your life has taken you. But when we're in that middle life age, you know, and approaching the later life ages, sometimes there is a lot on our shoulders. Okay, so we have that. We're considered the sandwich generation. We have our, teenagers or young adult children, you know, on this side. And the other side, we have our parents who are aging. That's the family life cycle. That's kind of where, a lot of us might be. As we get older, I tell people that parenting just gets different. It's not that, and you never are not a parent. You know, you're going to be a parent for the rest of your life. But moving through those stages of life, that's where people get stuck sometimes. If you don't, if you're not prepared or don't have appropriate skills, or, you know, you're struggling with something and you're moving into a different life stage. And what I'm talking about is, you know, like moving on, getting married, you know, you're married and you're a young couple, and then you're having children, and then you have teens, and then you have college students, and then you have an empty nest, and then you become, you know, your kids get married, you know, and have children, you become a grandparent. I became a grandparent in my mid-50s, which was, I didn't mind, but, you know, I felt a little young. Everybody like, wow, I had a friend at our church in Charlotte. She was in her early 70s and had just become a grandparent. Anyway, there's hope. Anybody? but we were in our mid-50s because our son married somebody who was 6 years older, and he probably would have waited a few years to have children, but she didn't want to wait but 2 years. And so, you know, they had children a little earlier, although he became a father at the same age as John became a father at 26. So, you know, when we were that age, it didn't seem like a big deal. But but at his age, he was a little bit on the younger side. So sometimes people get stuck when they move through life transitional stages. But when we get to this stage that we're at with empty nest or approaching this empty nest, there's a lot that's going on in everybody's lives around us that we're a part of. And So that can be a little overwhelming. I want to ask, there is also, just a minute, I'll tell you this, there is something called the empty nest syndrome, okay? That is legitimate, and it's a term applied, I'm just going to read this so I get it exact. It's a term applied to the feelings of emptiness and loss that mothers, sometimes fathers, feel after the children have left home to establish their own lives. Okay, so there actually is, and it's not just mothers, fathers too. I actually went on to graduate school when our youngest went into kindergarten. Back to graduate school. I already had another graduate degree, but I went on to and back to graduate school when our youngest was in kindergarten. And looking back on that, that actually prepared me for another career that kept me occupied. That wasn't intentional planning on my part, like, okay, my kids are going to be gone, I need to do something. It was just like, oh, this is what I've been wanting to do, and I'm going to go ahead and do this, and I felt God leading me. But actually, that helped me as, you know, our kids started going off to college, because I had something else to focus on. It could be a job, you know, it could, not that you have to work, you know, everybody makes their own decisions on what they want to do, but it could be volunteering somewhere, you know, that you haven't had, you've always wanted to do and didn't feel like you had time before. So what else is happening in this empty nest stage? So I mentioned parents' health issues. And, you know, you're dealing with sometimes life and death decisions, whether your parents can come live with you, or do you need to find a retirement facility or assisted living that they can go live in. What can just throw out a few ideas of things that you are going through or that you know about that can happen in this empty nest stage? Yes. Yeah, that's a big adjustment. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. What's that? I know. Yeah. Yeah. Finding them projects. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Anything else? Yeah. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Definitely. Anything else? Yes. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. Definitely. Somebody. Oh, absolutely. We've done it twice. Twice in 1 year. Yeah. and we survived. Yeah. They're staying home. Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. And that's actually, I have that in my notes as something I wanted to talk about, because if you have a child, young adult child with a disability, you may never, like you're saying, and that's an important factor also. I'm glad you brought that up, because I had it in my notes to talk about, is that you might never totally have an empty nest. And that's a whole nother, it's like you have to transition into how do we live this stage of life with this young adult in our home, you know, and planning for that. Also, if they have severe disabilities, you're thinking about, how do we prepare for, if we're not here, who's going to care for them? Or what kind of living arrangement, a group home or something, you know, that's a whole nother level of things to think about. Right. Thank you so much for bringing that up. Because, yeah, and like I said, sometimes your kids are going to come in and out. Maybe you have a child who's, you know, gotten divorced and they're in your home for a while, or had a child who's had a major health problem and, you know, and they're coming back to stay with you for a while. Or they have a grandchild, and they, you know, that needs support. You have a grandchild, and maybe they're not married, or they are married, but they just need somebody to help with the grandchild more. So there's, or great grandchildren, yeah. Okay. I'm going to go on my. Okay, we're talking about health. Okay, so isn't. You know, I have to laugh about this because it's like, okay, we're going through all this. Now we're going to have menopause, you know, so we may not be something major, a major health problem, but that's the life stage that we're in, you know, and that's a transition and hormonal adjustments and, you know, maybe not feeling like yourself. And, it doesn't have to be a terrible life stage, but I'm just acknowledging that it does happen and you are going through it in the midst of, you know, other emotional things for yourself. So it's finding that balance. Okay. I had down here looking toward retirement. You'd mentioned that, and how to provide for yourselves in that stage, but also how to deal with, you know, having a husband there more often, you know, and, you know, the honey-do list and that kind of thing. And I'm going to be bold and say this, okay, because somebody in here is probably experiencing something like this. But you have young adult children, and you need to know that you are not responsible for the decisions they make in their life, okay? You cannot control the decisions that they make. If, you know, we raise them, you know, the best that we can, but I don't want anybody leaving here thinking, oh my gosh, you know, I feel less than because my child, has chosen a homosexual lifestyle. We have families in this church that have had to, that have experienced that. And you have to not judge yourself, and because God's not judging you. You did the best with your resources, and when they get to be a certain age, they may make choices that are, you don't feel are God honoring. And you know what you have to do is you have to love them in spite of it. You don't love their actions. Just like when our kids are little, we're upset with their behavior. We love them. We don't love the fact that they're not listening to us. You know, they're being disobedient or whatever. There are lots of things that can happen. You know, I think I said divorce, homosexuality, living with somebody, living with a partner, you know, that may not be what our belief system is. There's a myriad of things that can happen. And this is, happens kind of in this stage where they're making big life decisions. You know, we have a daughter that got addicted to alcohol. And just like we can't take the blame for their choices, we also, when our kids are successful and doing really well, we can't take the credit either. It is God, okay? And so don't take that blame on you if your child is not walking with the Lord and living a God-honoring lifestyle. But also, don't be so proud on the other end that I have a perfect child and this is what they're doing. And, weren't we good parents? Because you know what? None of us are perfect. I tell my clients, there's no perfect person. There's no perfect family. There's no perfect parents. There's no perfect kids. Okay? None of us are perfect. You know, sin is, there's a sin nature out there, you know, and we battle with that. Anyway, I just want to say that, Pam, can you be my time person? Like, I'm looking at my time like it, we're supposed to end at 10:15, but at 10:10, can you, like, raise your hand or something? Okay. All right. Okay, now we're going to move into more of the concept of what I want to talk about today, because I think it's something that will help us at any stage of life, but when we go through transitions especially. And you know what? I wish, okay, we had, there's different seminars for younger couples, you know, bringing a baby home and stuff like that. But I think they need to hear this too. So what I'm talking about today, if you have, young adult children that are married, whether they have children or not, what I want to talk about is this is something that you want to do at whatever stage of marriage that you're in. You want to stay emotionally connected. Because if you have, and I look at my daughters and son that are married, and I think they have this, so emotional connection, it's related to what's called attachment. Some, you may have heard something about that. We mostly hear it with young children, like you drop them off at the nursery and the separation anxiety and stuff, and they cry a little, but then when they come there, they settle down. Some kids don't settle down, you know, and cry the whole time. our ability to attach to other people is developed when we're young, when we're infants, by our caregivers, our parents, whoever they are. And that attachment carries with us into adulthood. And sometimes there's like really positive things that if we have insecure attachment can improve that sense of attachment, or sometimes there's really negative things that you experience that can make you more insecure later on, even if you had a positive attachment when you were a child. So I will tell you a little bit for me. I grew up in a Christian home, and I'll start crying on this. But my parents are no longer living. John and I actually are the youngest in both of our families. My dad actually passed away before we moved to Birmingham 4.5 years ago. And my mom passed away when I was 35 of colon cancer. And she was 65. And so she's been gone a long time. My dad 4.5 years, but I grew up in a home where I had secure attachment. I knew that, you know, no matter what happened in my world, that my parents loved me unconditionally. So that had a big impact on me. You know, some of us did not grow up in homes that were like that, or we might have had one parent where we felt secure attachment and one where we didn't. But that can affect our perception of ourselves and how we interact in relationships and that kind of thing. So sometimes we can be anxious. There's three main, so I'm kind of going into the counseling mode here. I just want to tell you this because it's an important concept. There's three main kinds of attachment, and they are anxious, avoidant, and secure. Okay? So anxious attachment develops when there is inconsistency in parenting. You know, sometimes the parent's there and sometimes they're not. You never quite know where you stand. So you become anxious and you kind of over pursue. And what that means is, and you've had a friend or maybe somebody in your family like this, you know, they're like, you didn't answer my text. You didn't call me. You know, what is wrong? Are we okay? Are we okay? Really? Are we okay? You know, and that is kind of that anxious attachment. Okay. I had a friend like that, not here, but before. And I didn't know about this at the time, but I realized, oh my gosh, that's what that was. You know, and then we could have avoidant attachment, and that's like emotional withdrawal. They kind of check out for whatever reason. They're not available emotionally. I'm not talking about a parent who's in the military overseas and they're not available. You know, they might still try to stay connected. you know, via FaceTime or letters or whatever. But I'm talking about emotionally available. You know, they're not, they weren't, you know, you can't turn to them. And honestly, some people, sometimes you have one parent that's you're more attached to than the other, or sometimes it can be both, but sometimes it can be neither. And I can't tell you how many clients I said, who did you turn to when you were a child and you were upset, you know, or a teenager when you didn't make the team or whatever. And they're like, I didn't turn to anybody. I didn't have anybody to turn to. You know, I just kind of went to my room and, you know, tried to take care of it myself, or I got my own bandages or whatever. So sometimes, you know, it can be, you have that with neither parent. And then you have this, so the other, that's the avoidant, you know, emotionally disconnected, unavailable, or withdrawn. And then the other is secure. And that is when you, like I said before, nobody's perfect. Nobody's going to be there 100% for you. And we're not going to be there 100% for everybody else. But it happens, it develops when you know somebody's got your back. You need that, they're there for you. If you, you know, you didn't make the team in high school or get that part in the play or get into that college that you wanted or get that job that you wanted or you got fired, you know, you know, or something not so good happens, you know, it doesn't matter because you are loved unconditionally. And you have a parent or other caregivers who are there for you and support you. Now, does that sound familiar, being loved unconditionally? Okay. So our ultimate attachment security is in God. And He loves us with an everlasting love. And so that's how this is connected, is He's going to be there no matter what. When you have that relationship with Him, you know, we all need what's called a safe haven and a secure base. And first and foremost, we need that with God. But here on earth, you know, we need it with our parents or other significant people in our life and our spouses. Okay, so we are created for connection. God created us that way. And I'm not trying to psychologize this at all. It's just, you know, it's just a basic truth. We are created for connection. We have Adam and Eve. You know, Eve was created Adam's helpmate. So we're created for that connection. And why I'm talking about this is it's important in all stages of life, but especially when you go through this empty nest stage, is you're suddenly, the kids are gone, and it may just be you and your husband. Maybe you've become a widow sooner than you expected, which honestly, a year ago, I was kind of, you know, thinking, what am I going to do if this happens to me? But you still, even if you are a widow and or single, you still need people in your life that can provide that secure attachment and connection. And that you can have that secure base and that safe haven, okay? You know, it can be friends, it can be, you know, siblings, your adult siblings, whomever. It can be your spouse. Hopefully, if you're married, it's your spouse. You know, but that is not always the case, okay? What I'm saying now does not apply if you're in an abusive relationship. I'm going to make that exception. If you're in an abusive relationship, you know, you need to get help and support for that, either through your church or a counselor or friends or whatever. But when I'm talking about maintaining that connection with your husband, that's, you know, if you're on the same playing field, it's not unequal power in an abusive relationship. But so what's going to help you work through this empty nest stage is to turn toward each other and connect with each other. And if you've lost that, you know, in how many ever years of marriage, John and I will be married 40 years in June. But we got married young. If you do the math, I said I was 60, so I was actually 20. And he was 21, and we had one more year of college. But did I tell you how I met him? Okay. So we met in seventh grade. So we knew each other for a long time. Yeah, we did not date. Well, we did date. We didn't date initially, not in middle school. But in high school, we eventually started dating and went off to different colleges, to try to be mature about it. And then the next year, we transferred to the same college and graduated together. We graduated from, it's now Colorado Christian University in Lakewood. It was Rockmont College at the time. Anyway, we'd known each other a long time, and we got married before our last year of college and lived in married student housing and all that kind of stuff. So I was 20, he was 21. I've thought a long time about how many years he's been a part of my life. You know, it got past the half. I've known him over half my life. Well, now it's way over half my life. But God blessed us with that. You know, his dad was a pastor. And he moved to Scottsbluff, Nebraska, is where we met and graduated from high school. His dad was a pastor, and he moved there in seventh grade. That's when I met him. Okay. And known him since that time. So we've had a long foundation, but we don't have a perfect marriage. Nobody does. Okay. But I feel like that's my secure base, you know, and no matter what happens in life, you know, we can turn to each other. And there have been a couple times, okay, just got a few more minutes. I wanted to share about that, how when you have that attachment and connection, you can go through many, many challenging things together and come out better and more solidified on the other side. There were a couple times in ministry. John's been in ministry for a long time. Like when we were in college, he had a church in Evergreen, Colorado, where he did the music at. And then he taught high school music and then eventually went into ministry full time. So he's done church music for a long time, and we've been in a lot of different churches. But we've been in some challenging churches. Not like Briarwood at all, you know. And every church has their challenges, okay? But we were in a couple churches early on in his ministry. It sort of felt like God was using us and him to, to unearth the evil that was going on and uncover it and point it out. And so we were in a couple situations that were challenging. There was one time, and I won't say what state it was in, John came back after a session meeting, and he was like really torn up because, part of the session was split, and they were trying to oust, the senior pastor. And John spoke up for righteousness and did the right thing. And when he came home, he was so torn up about it. And he said, "How do I know if I did the right thing? I don't know. I just felt so alone standing out there and speaking truth." And I told him, I said, "I know you. I know you, and I know the kind of person you are. And I know if you spoke that you were doing the right thing because, you know, God was using you." And that was like a turnaround point for him, you know, because he knew that I had his back. And I had known him all those years, and I knew the kind of person he was. That's attachment. When you can have difficult things going on, but you have somebody that's there for you that you can turn to. Okay. So, All right. I'm moving on to kind of the application. We've got about 5 minutes. Yeah. That's what I figured. Okay. So, the application part of this, and there's another scripture in here I wanted to include. Jeremiah 31:3. The Lord appeared to us in the past saying, I have loved you with an everlasting love. I have drawn you with unfailing kindness. Okay. That's where I'm talking about. God loves us unconditionally. And that's our number one attachment connection. Okay, application-wise, talking about these attachment styles I've talked to you about, and seriously, if you have younger daughters especially or sons, you know, support them in trying to maintain their connection with their spouses. Because that is so important. You know, if you keep it when you're younger and then maintain it as you're older, it's going to make a huge difference, and you may not feel so alone when you come through this empty nest stage. But if you are struggling and feeling kind of emotionally disconnected at this point, work on becoming emotionally connected, okay? And practically speaking, that's tune into your husband's emotional needs and share yours with him. You know, you have to attune to what's happening and how he might be feeling. But John used to always tell me, don't just assume I know what you meant. Tell me. You know, men are kind of like that. Just lay it out there for me. Tell me, because I may not, don't assume I know what you mean. Actually tell me. Also, at this stage of life, be flexible and respond as a team with what happens around you with your adult children or parents. Because life's not always predictable. So you have to be flexible. We had no idea that, you know, we'd have two adult daughters living with us at different times and a dog, you know. But, you know, be flexible because things can change. You never know what's going to happen with your parents' health and what's going to happen with them. And, you know, whether it might work for them to come live with you or you might have to make a transition, move them somewhere. And the other thing is, don't judge others and what they are going through. You never know the whole story. So you might see bits and pieces of something happening, but you don't know the story that's behind that in their life and with their family. So don't judge those other people, what they're going through. If you see something that you're concerned about, pray about it. If you know that person well enough, you could, you know, and you feel like you can talk to them, that's okay. But really, I mean, we all, and this is for me too, we all need to work on not judging others when we don't know the whole story. Okay. And one of the authors I'm going to share a book with, it's called, he talks about, you know, this is empty nest stage, marriage in the empty nest stage. That's what we're talking about today. And he has a phrase, it's called, the key to a lifetime of love is emotional responsiveness. Staying emotionally connected. Okay. So, okay. I really don't have time for questions. I'm supposed to do a handout with, or a drawing for gifts. So let me move to that. And I want you to know that I did not dress casually today because we have to, and I'm also not going to be here. I was here last night, but a couple of us have to leave and go to the Caroline house because we're doing a bridal tea this afternoon that was planned way before this. And when Christy asked me to speak, I said, I'd be happy to, but can you put me in the first slot? Because then we're going to, that's why I'm more dressed up. So we're going to a bridal tea and get that set up for this afternoon. So there's three books that I had on my list right here. This is called Hold Me Tight. It's kind of a key one. It's on that resource list. It's 7 Conversations for a Lifetime of Love. This is another one. They're both by Dr. Sue Johnson, and the other one has this other guy, Kendis Sandifer, with him. This is the same book, but with a Christian perspective. I'm not sure that, I'm not sure they needed to do this, but they did. So, I mean, because this is a good, solid book of information anyway, but it's the same concepts, but he brings a Christian perspective into it. So it's not like this is bad stuff. That you can't read or anything, but this is good stuff. This is the basic core of what this book is. And it's on that list, and it should be in our packet that we got. Anyway, this whole title, I love it because it's Hold Me Tight. And through the storms of life and whatever you're going through, you know, when my mom died when I was 35, I just wanted John to hold me. You know, sometimes you couldn't talk. Sometimes you didn't want to have sex. You know, you just wanted somebody to hold you. And that's what this is about. You want somebody to hold you tight, whatever's going on in your life. So, and then this one is, it's called 8 Dates. It's kind of a workbook type thing to go through. And it's by John and Julie Gottman. They're both, psychologists and, do a lot on counseling couples and done a lot of research. And so they have some other books, but they turned their book into kind of a workbook for 8 Dates type thing. So there's that one.